to Murphy's Law podcast. We're going to jump right back into it. What we were discussing before is basically where we come into play after the Emergency Management Act and all the Colorado the Barber stuff and our feet on the ground and how it relates.
So this is probably going to be my favorite part of the segment, because we're going to talk about something that people don't talk about. And if you've been watching the little podcast here on the separation of powers and the building blocks we've been putting together, one of the questions would be, all right, well, put this in English here. Give me an example of where Congress gave a law to the executive and shouldn't have. It was a non-delegation. It didn't work. And give me a simple example, Dave Delaney. Well, I have one for you. Okay, and so this is the Public Health Code, which is a rollover from 1918 during the pandemic. Now, I don't know if you can see that. Now, that's how long the paragraph is, okay? I don't know that Ian has anything on his menu that's that short, you know? Because it says, like, pork, and then you got the onions and stuff, and you're like, okay, you know? But that's it. In fact, it's just that first paragraph, and it's the highlighted part. All of the restaurant closures, all of the mask mandates, everything that has been really on the books since the 1945 got struck down. So you had the 45 executive powers, don't buy paint, don't put a boat in the water, and then that went down. And then up came the health department. So all these restaurant closures, Marlena going to Lansing, the restaurant in Calumet, having to wear a mask until it was lifted this summer of 2021, wearing a mask in Walmart, everything came down to these words. Here's what the legislature gave to the executive branch. The director, that's the health department, by emergency order, and here's the key, may prohibit the gathering of people for any purpose. I think that's 8 words. Period. That's what it says. Period. Doesn't say for how long. Doesn't say under what circumstances. It just says during an epidemic, which is what? How long does an epidemic last? And who controls that? They gave all that power to an employee of the executive branch to prohibit the gathering of people for any purpose. So this is a gathering because it's 2 people or more. This is not permitted. And going into Walmart would be a gathering. And so the restaurants couldn't gather indoor. What about Walmart? And what about Kmart? And what about going to the movies? Well, those weren't included. So when you get to pick and choose who the law applies to, mm-hmm. Okay, that's a little different than the police, I'm going to give you a break. Okay, the law applies to everybody. But in this situation, the sign would say speed limit 75 miles an hour. Unless you're driving an American car, then there's no speed limit.
Right.
But the rest of you, well, that's discriminatory. So that therein lies the problem. It has no standards. It has no limitation to it. It gives this person the free rein. This is not an elected official that has to get the majority of Congress to agree to this, okay? And it's not even in here that they can close restaurants. They're expanding it. They're taking a basic law and they're running with it. And so
I had this sitting next to the 45 that got struck down. And I had actually at one point written out how many sections, how many paragraphs, how many words were in the 78 that was struck down because of the non-delegation violation,
right,
compared to this little piece of paper right here. And it will be impressive to me to see what argument is made that can justify this holding up when the multiple pages of the 45 were struck down. Oh, that's one of the things I'm interested to see. But that therein lies to me the simplicity of this whole thing, and it, like you said, it does not define anything. At least the 45 had some further definition on it, hence the multiple pages and paragraphs and sections, and it still wasn't adequate to meet that mark for them.
Excellent point. Just as a parenthetical issue, which applies more to the mask cases than this, the next paragraph says that The director can then establish procedures to be followed during the pandemic. Procedures. The courts have said a procedure, which I think of like a medical procedure, a procedure means a mask. But in any event, it's still only 15, 25 words that are contained in here. But for the Iron Pig's benefit, it's this language. It's the prohibition of the gathering of people for any purpose. Any purpose. It's wide open. It's discretionary. There's no rules. There's no regulations. There's no limitation. We were unable to defeat this. When they came after you on your licenses, one division of the multiple divisions of the executive branch, liquor control, Department of Agriculture, were enforcing this, while the same branch was interpreting it, judicial, add that, and writing it. There's James Madison.
Right.
Tyranny. That's why they left England. Now, there are some cases where the courts back off a little bit if there are a lot of restrictions in here. Take the Emergency Management Act we talked about. That does give the governor law writing powers, 28 days. They figured that's good enough.
Right.
That's going to make it.
A lot of people know she was also charged with violating that during that first episode of the executive orders. Not only did they strike down the EPGA or whatever we're calling it.
I call it power and emergency.
The 45.
That's right, yes.
It's very interesting to see this whole thing unfolding the way that it is. So I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. We have a give and take all the time. And if you don't interrupt, I tend to go. The other thing I want to talk about is constitutionality. Everybody throws that around. It's unconstitutional. You get pulled over for a speeding ticket. It's unconstitutional to wear this seatbelt. And we never really know what those terms mean. And
Right. Hopefully
we will. And Ian knows, before he ever called me about this, I was doing business law and real estate law. I don't have a copy of the Constitution on my desk. Not really the hottest subject when you're practicing in a small town.
Right.
And I had to go back and get that book. This is why it's unconstitutional, because in the Michigan Constitution and the U.S. Constitution by James Madison, because the states duplicated the basic parts.
Sure.
Everybody has three branches. That's why it's unconstitutional, because the Michigan Constitution says, legislature, you cannot give your law writing power to the executive. You can't do it. That's non-delegation. And that's what happened in the 45. And that's why on next Monday, January 10th at 9:00, we're saying to the local circuit judge, this statute, the director may prohibit the gathering of people for any purpose, is unconstitutional. Okay, because that power was given to the executive branch. And as Ian pointed out a moment ago, the 1945 law said, in times of great peril, in emergency and crisis, the governor may act such laws and rules as the governor deems reasonable and necessary. And we talked before the ruling came out, I thought the governor might make it reasonable and necessary. At least there's some, I mean, it's up to the governor to decide those terms, which the court didn't like. But there was something. It doesn't even say that here. Nope. It doesn't say not to exceed 28 days. It doesn't say reasonable gathering. At least you'd have a little bit of room. And necessary gathering. Hey, this is necessary. Where the Board of Commissioners were meeting, we have to meet. Doesn't have any of that. It has the bottom rung of the ladder language. And it's as simple as this. If the 45 went down, this has to go down.
Yep.
And if this goes down, that means that the executive branch never had the authority to close every restaurant in the state of Michigan for as long as they did. It was illegal.
That's pretty much what we're saying, what we're arguing, what we're pleading for. And, you know, not just restaurants, gyms, hair salons. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's incredible. I wish I had that sheet, literally writing down how many words, because that is probably one of the most destructive pieces of legislation to destroy small business in the state of Michigan. This little thing right here is responsible for so many restaurants closing, not to speak of how many other small businesses just didn't make it through the last year and a half. So we're definitely going after this. We're going to take one more quick break, and we'll be right back to kind of wrap everything up. We'll be right back. Murphy's Law Podcast. All right, welcome back to Murphy's Law Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Murphy, and with me is Dave Delaney, our attorney for the Iron Pig and our appeal going on with the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. One thing that has been talked about actually almost since day one, and anybody that has seen any of the body cam footage, you know, I mentioned the words due process right out of the gate. And it was in relation to the Liquor Commission coming in and suspending our license. And I had felt at that time that they were basically violating, you know, the due process that I agreed to in our license agreement. They do have the power to come in and inspect and do all kinds of different things that we agree to. As I mean, having a liquor license is a privilege. I just felt at that time that they were trying to make an example of us and decided to go a different route and emergency suspend our license. And within hours, the Liquor Commission was up in here doing their thing. But I wanted to have you touch on due process a little bit really quick, because I think versus the non-delegation and the separation of power stuff that we talked about previously, a lot of people understand the basic concept of due process.
Yeah, and it's a term that we talk about a lot, and when I put it in English, which I hope I can, it makes a lot more sense. We have a great system of justice. I know there's complaints about that, and lawyers and judges and enforcement and things like that. But let's get right down to an example we've been using all along. You're driving, you get pulled over. And the officer says that I passed you going the other way, and I know you're wearing a yellow shirt, and I did not see your seatbelt on. Okay. No, I was wearing my seatbelt. Well, I don't think you were, and I'm going to write you a ticket. It's $55. It's no points, and that's it. Everybody knows, but you forget. You have the right to due process. Well, what does that mean? Notice and an opportunity to be heard. So if you have the time or the inclination or the money, you can represent yourself in America for the most part, and you can hire a lawyer. And so you do that, and you go to court. And this is a fantastic system of justice. The officer has to show up in person, putting aside Zoom and those things, and testify. Well, he drove by, and what I saw was this, and you have the right to ask him questions. Mm-hmm. Over a $55 civil infraction, you can bring in experts. Well, you know, the seatbelts that we use today are not black, and you couldn't see it and things like that. So fast forward to Ian's case. One of the chief complaints that I had about when his license was being taken for the liquor control and his food license was due process. We did have an administrative hearing, mm-hmm. Which was to some degree the right to cross-examine and things like that. But what I wanted was the right to go to court, okay, which is different, okay? The administrative is on the executive side, if you watched all of our prior podcasts about the separation of powers. I don't want to be in the executive division. I want to be in the judicial division. Now, they do have judicial courts in the executive side, but I want to be over by the judicial in front of a local judge. And anyway, we were arguing that the health code gave him due process, but we're back to the prior podcast. This is section 333. Anything with the three threes is the health code, 2253. And that simply says the director, by emergency order, may prohibit the gathering of people for any purpose, period. Doesn't say, and the right to court, which everything else does. Civil infractions, speeding tickets, criminal law for sure. So we didn't have that due process right that we wanted here. However, there's another avenue to this. Anybody that's a licensed individual, Carl the Barber, food license, liquor license, and one that's really more popular, a builder's license. Mm. So if you're a builder and you have a license, you know that LARA in Lansing regulates you. Yeah. Somebody writes in, says you did a terrible job on their shed. You get the right to that hearing that Ian had, that executive hearing with the administrative law judge, and you may not be too happy with that. But there's a component to that that's really important. Once you're through the executive hearings, you have the right to appeal to the circuit court where you live or where you conduct your business. There's a special exception in the law, and that's really important because you want to litigate in your backyard. The Court of Claims, without going too far into the field here, is a state court when you have state claims. So you're driving down the road and you blow your tire and you sue the Department of Transportation. You must sue them in Lansing, in their backyard, if you will. Everybody who plays football, you want to play at home.
Yeah.
You know, the Packers want to play at Lambeau Field.
Right.
They don't want to play anyplace else. So you want to play in your home court if you can, where the local jurisdiction is, where you live and where you work and where your community is, and when, you know, it's like a jury of your peers. But I don't disagree with the Court of Claims Act, because if we've got 86 or 87 counties and everyone's suing all over the state of Michigan, the executive branch should have the right to litigate in one court. And so I'm probably okay with that. But in this case, if you have a builder's license and you're challenged and your appeal doesn't succeed those first mini appeals, you get to go to your local judge and say, you know what, I was wronged here. And that's where Ian's case came about. The Liquor Control Commission came in, took his liquor license, and we got it back. Ian got it back. The food license was taken by the Department of Agriculture. He got that back. So why appeal? You have the licenses back. But the last one standing was the Department of Health and Human Services, a state agency that would ordinarily require litigation in the Court of Claims in Lansing. But the law provides a special exception because they sued him first in an administrative appeal, and the law allows him to challenge it with the local judge. And I always knew that you could make constitutional challenges, but who's ever done that?
Right.
Who's ever taken a builder's license and said, Judge, I have a constitutional law claim here? No one ever. Well, we were done, and it was the last thing on the table here. And I got looking at this law, and I said, we have the right to challenge the Constitution. And what are we going to do? We're going to say that the law they used, which we covered in the prior podcast, that you can prohibit the gathering of people whenever you feel like it, is unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Because it's a non-delegation from the prior podcast. It's the legislature giving that power to the Department of Human Services. And it, from the prior podcast, if the 1945 law went down, this law goes down. So we challenged it. And so the Attorney General is involved in that case. And Ian has a hearing on January 10th, 9 o'clock on Monday, to make oral argument on this case. And then the court will issue a decision. We're confident it's going to go to the Court of Appeals either way. If the court finds it's unconstitutional, we take no further action. That's what we want. If the court finds it's constitutional, we're going to appeal to the Court of Appeals and to the Supreme Court if we have to. The other thing is, ironically, by timing, tomorrow, Friday, January 7th, the U.S. Supreme Court, the big dog in Washington, has a non-delegation case. And so people listening think, well, it's not relevant. This is putting me to sleep. They're going to decide separation of powers on Friday at an emergency hearing. The U.S. Supreme Court's a turtle. They move really slow. They're going to decide the vaccine mandate. And here we go again, if you've been watching these podcasts. The executive branch at the federal level is the president and all of those agencies under him, EPA, Social Security, there's 200 of them. Those agencies came up with a vaccine mandate. There's no such thing as a vaccine mandate in those laws.
Right.
Sound familiar?
Yep.
And you've got CDC writing these laws, mandating people get vaccines. That's the job of Congress. Whether you like Congress in Washington or not, if they vote on a vaccine mandate and the House approves it and the president signs it, it's the law.
Yep.
Not over. Run to the courts and ask them if that's legal. But they're in really much better shape. If Nancy Pelosi and her group approves that, then all you can do is vote them out. But that's what the accountability is.
Right.
You can vote your people out.
Right.
It may take some time, but you have what James Madison envisioned is we the people.
Right.
Might take some time, but that's how it goes. This is what we have. If you don't like it,
move. Elections have consequences, I think, is how that, you know, it comes to, you know, we've talked so much about that collectively in the last, you know, election cycle, if you will. And of course, we're coming up on another one this next year with the governor's race and some other things. So
those are important.
They are important. And Madison clearly shows that in his words.
Yeah.
I tell you what, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. I know you've got a lot of work to do coming up for Monday. It's been a long road. it may be over soon. I don't expect it necessarily to be over soon. We're eagerly anticipating actually having our home court,
right?
pun intended, having a local judge hear that. That's important for us. You know, we've talked about that since we discovered that we were able to keep that here and not go down to Lansing or the Swamp, as we always joke about, their home court, where these cases have not been decided favorably for our side, if you will. So it's nice that we get to be in our backyard, literally across the street, with a judge that does face election by his constituents in this county.
Right.
So there is even further proof of what Madison was trying to talk about, and the elections have consequences. And I'm not saying that you should go after a judge if they do or don't like, but right. that's part of the process. It'll be interesting to see what they have to say after Monday's case. Don't know that we'll find out anything on Monday, probably not. But it'll be very interesting to see how Judge Hunter is gonna look at some of this. We know he's a very good judge, a very smart judge. It's unfortunate. It will be via Zoom. We'll publish the YouTube link and everything for that so people can watch. We're going to try and do it Facebook Live as well. It is a big deal. We know that there are a lot of people that are following it, not just in our region and the state, but outside as well. Some friends of ours in Australia are going through the same thing right now, bar Wonder. They've been fine. They've had the police come in. It's been interesting to see literally on the other side of the planet what's happening over there with basically the exact same thing. Thank you for coming in today. I appreciate your time. I appreciate everything that you have done for us up till now. And I look forward to Monday. I'll see you via Zoom. Thank you for taking the time to come in today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I wanted to add one thing, not to get the last word, because I do want to give that to Ian.
He's an attorney. What do you expect?
Right, exactly. When I hear you talk, I think about Thomas Jefferson, who preceded Madison as a president. I think he was 3 and Madison was 4 for our presidents, and James Madison. This is what they wanted. They were smart, but they were smart because they suffered. They suffered under the king. And they never wanted this to happen to the citizens again. And they built this system, and it's going to straighten itself out eventually. But this is precisely what James Madison wanted you to do, is we the people for liberty, is to go into your other branch of government and say, correct this. And so it's just, you know, people forget about the history of America. Even lawyers do, and even I've done it. But it has now come back. And that was 230 years ago. They had such foresight. Yeah. Here we are in 2022 sitting in a restaurant in Gaylord, Michigan. And Madison and Jefferson would never have envisioned that from Virginia. But their brilliance still works.
I've said this a few times, and this is a little bit off topic, and we're going a little long now. But I've said from the beginning that, and asked this question, if we were trying to write the Constitution today, I don't think it would ever get written. It would never be passed. There's no way that there would be any kind of bipartisan support for a majority of these things anymore. And I don't know what that means exactly, but I think it's about time that a lot of us, including myself, go back and start looking at some of these things, because they are coming for liberties of ours. You know, the word tyranny is thrown around a lot lately, and probably rightfully so. It may be overused a little bit, but when it comes down to it, that ultimately is the mechanism that people in power are trying to use. And when you look at that word tyranny, it comes up so much in Jefferson and Madison and Lincoln and some of these other politicians. Remember, these were politicians back in the day. We need more of these type of people that go back and are understanding these basic precepts, and not all of the mumbo jumbo that's been added on top of it since then. Remove all the emotion from all of this stuff. And that's what I've said from the beginning. It's not about COVID. It's not about masks. It's not about you telling me what I can and can't do. It's about the law and the way that it was written and the way that is now being interpreted. And this is our way to go in and further help interpret that little statute right there. that 2233599 or whatever. 3332233.
Yeah.
I still want you to have the last word, but you reminded me the irony of this because we didn't plan the scheduling of this case. So tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court takes oral argument on the non-delegation, on the separation of powers. They issue the ruling Monday morning at 9:30 during our oral arguments in the case. Now, the Supreme Court never, you can't get a small claims judge to issue a ruling from a Friday hearing on a Monday.
Right.
So what's that tell you about what they're trying to accomplish here? I think that they're going, I believe they're going to say, this is Congress's job, not the executive. And they're going to be affirming in Washington what Madison set out to do.
And it seems like as these cases have popped up around the country in different jurisdictions, it seems like most of them have been ruling in favor of knocking down a mandate versus not. Does that seem to be true in what you're reading?
Yes, we had a couple of courts on the West Coast that said, oh no, the executive branch can do this. They can write laws when they want. But the rest of the courts have not. These federal courts, to my surprise.
Is that because it's the left coast?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just curious.
Right. Those are the Ninth Circuit is known for being on the left side of the law. The other courts, Texas, Alabama, Ohio, those kind of places, Louisiana, those federal courts, and there's been a lot of them. In the last couple of days, there were court cases. And it amazes me because they begin with this. James Madison said tyranny. And I thought that's what I've been saying.
Yeah.
The separation of powers. If you want a vaccine mandate, then you have to ask Congress to do it. But will they? They have to be reelected every 2 years.
Right.
Will your congressman or congresswoman say, Ian, you have to have a needle put in your arm? They haven't done it. They could have done it. They haven't.
Right.
Who's doing it? An employee at the CDC who you can't elect and unelect. That's the problem. And so the Supreme Court is simply going to say this, I believe, but you never know. It belongs to Congress. If Congress writes a law after they rule, then that's it. Unless they find some other way to knock it down, like a religious exemption, that
right.
could be the next argument.
Right.
But it doesn't belong there. They're going to restore the balance of power between the three branches and then move on. And I think that is telltale because that's what's happening in your case. It's what's happening in the mask mandate cases. You know, and so as much as I say the most important branch is the local legislature, if they start passing these laws, that's it.
Right.
Then I'm done arguing this because the law is being applied, but I get to vote.
Right.
Might take me 2 years, but
right.
that's the power we want is the we the people for liberty.
And that's what I've said, too, about the EMA, the Emergency Management Act.
Yeah.
It still gives her 28 days or the governor 28 days to
yes.
do essentially whatever they want.
Right.
We will abide by that. That's the current law that's on the books.
Yep.
Whatever you're going to do for 28 days, but at least give our elected officials hearings after that, on that 29th day or the 27th day or whatever it happens yep. to be, to justify going further. That's how it should have been. When I originally mentioned it could have been done a better way, that's the way that it should have been.
Right.
28 day increments or whatever it happens to be after that first 28 days, engage your voters and your population and your legislature and say, is this working? Is this not working? Give an opportunity for these people to have a voice in exactly how you're destroying their lives. Let's be honest. Well, I wanted to ask you one other question.
We're so good at wrapping
and this
up,
is,
right?
Well, and this is just, pure, this is just pure speculation on my part. And I've wanted to ask this question. I've got you exclusively. And
I'm feeling the pressure.
Well, yeah. And there's no wrong answer, and I'm just curious about it. It seems like the time that the governor had the EPGA, the 45,
right,
compared to how long she's been using the 78.
Yes, the health code.
Right, 3332253.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been smarter for her in hindsight? As it looks now, it seems like this 78 has had more longevity than the 45. And I don't know why that is, but I asked myself the question, would she have been better off to go with this health code from beginning of March versus, I don't know, would have the same argument come about from a Carl the Barber if she had used the health code now? And of course, it's pure speculation on our part. But I'm just curious. I mean, after the fact, it looks like this has had more longevity than the 45 did.
That's a great.
And the 45 had so much more to it than
yes,
that.
Yes, right.
So it boggles my mind a little bit, and maybe it's only because our case it came about a little bit differently and went through the system a little bit differently than Carl's did. I don't know. It's just something I think about a lot that, you know, maybe the Tyrant in Chief should have probably used the 78.
A couple of components there. First, the 1945, which is the Emergency Management Act, which is gone now, specifically said the governor can do this. So it was direct power. So her counsel would have said, this is the one you want, governor, is to use the something with your name on it.
Yeah,
okay?
That makes sense. So, do you think she's feeling that way now?
Not really, probably not.
Yeah, okay.
You know, the other, the health law is further down the totem pole. That's still in the executive, but it doesn't say governor on it. It just says health director, which is under the governor. The local is not directly under there for the most part. The other thing about the 45 that carried the momentum was the vastness of it, okay? Mm-hmm. So that when the emergency powers were put out there, it controlled every business was closed. Every school was closed. You couldn't put a boat in the UP. You couldn't put a boat in Detroit. It was extremely vast. It was a large sea. And because of that, there was great momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So came with the Grand Rapids council, and actually went to the federal courts over there, and then was kicked to the Michigan Supreme Court. But everybody was in on it because it affected people in Kalamazoo. It affected people in the Sioux. Once that area got knocked down, the waters came down quite a bit. And then the flooding only happened at the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
So my hardware store across the street from your restaurant, I'm not too concerned. I do care about the Iron Pig, but Dave's Hardware is open, and right. So be it. So there was less attention. So just the restaurants were suffering, if you will. Now, that's an important organization, but the pie's much smaller. So
right.
So that's why it's been taking longer.
We're an easy industry to pick on, too.
That's right. Well, the licensing.
Well,
okay.
The licensing,
yes.
I'm not necessarily an advocate for unions, but yep. You know, we're not unionized like some others.
Right.
You know, the majority of us are small business owners.
Yep.
Restaurants are an extremely brittle industry in and of itself. 3 out of 5 go out of business within the first 5 years.
Yeah.
That statistic is going to go through the roof, given the last, you know, 18 months to 24 months.
3,000 closed during these orders to close the restaurants.
It's interesting right now, just as an added note, we are experiencing in the industry as a whole right now a resurgence of the new variant. There are several restaurants that have closed within the last week to 2 weeks because they've had staff either testing positive or are out just quarantining.
Yeah, you were telling me that.
Yep. Yeah, and it seems like it is more of an issue now inside restaurants, at least with staffing, that they are sick than this time last year or any other time during this pandemic. And what I find striking about, and the only reason I make that comment, is because the health department has issued no statements, no guidance, absolutely nothing. The last piece of information we got regarding any kind of sickness regarding restaurants and staffing was a local health department statement issued maybe September or August about an outbreak of norovirus, which is this common stomach bug in restaurants among staff. They felt that was important to put that out. Yet here we are with restaurants being shut down, thankfully with less severe cases and a shorter time frame to be out. But local and state health departments are virtually persona non grata. They have had nothing to say about it. And I find that very interesting. And I struggle to understand why, after almost 2 years of almost weekly notices from the state or local health departments regarding capacity restrictions, time restrictions, sign-in sheets, what you should do if an employee gets sick, all the record keeping that we had to have. And there's now this, if you want to call it resurgence, Thankfully, it's not as bad, and it's a different variant. But it seems to be worse and having more of an effect, and restaurants are open right now. I can't get my mind around why all of a sudden, I can speculate for sure, mm-hmm. but why this department that had their thumbs on us for so long right. are just gone. State and local level. Again, I can speculate. We can spend all day why that might be.
Right.
But it's just a question that I want to put out there for people to ask themselves, why is that? And a lot of people don't know these things because we get them via the health department in our email. Every restaurant owner should be getting them. But a lot of people just don't know that unless they get published or something like that. But I find it very interesting that it is just radio silence from the top down at this point. Is it over? Because if it's radio silence, then I would suggest they're saying that it's over. Those of us living in the real world, that's not the truth at all. We know a ton of people that have tested positive and have been sick and thankfully have recovered, and some haven't. And it's unfortunate that we're in a time now where we have to sit and wait to be told how to run our businesses on our own in a free market. That has been my biggest thing from the beginning. I don't drag people to come into the restaurant. You want to come in and have our barbecue? Great. You don't? That's fine. You want to say something on social media? That's fine. We're going to come back, and we're not the type of folks that are just going to say, oh, okay, you know, I'm sorry that we, you know, we're not the capitulators. And anybody that has followed any of our social media, especially our reviews, is going to know we just don't stand for any of that. And a lot of it has come from that peer pressure of people saying it's my way or the highway. And we just say it's choice. We just prefer to give Dave the choice to wear a mask or to come in and do what he wants. That's ultimately what we want out of this, is we want to be able to be put back in the position to operate our restaurant in the way that we feel is safe for our staff and for our customers. That's really it. We went way over on time. We exited about three times already, but who cares? Thank you so much for taking
Thank
the
you.
Time to come in today.
Absolutely.
I'm sure I'll be talking to you before Monday. In the meantime, thanks for joining us. Thanks for sticking around for these couple of episodes. We appreciate it. Murphy's Law Podcast, Dave Delaney, thanks for joining us.